He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You are listening to Boston Public Radio 89.7 WGBH.
And there are not just two of us today. We're joined by a third, which brings back memories, I should say, of days gone by. We are joined by the governor of the Commonwealth for an hour of Ask the Governor. That's him
from
singing.
From the corners but, go take, of my mind.
I know Barack Obama. God. I've heard Barack Obama sing.
God.
You are no. That was actually
that
quite
was pretty
something.
Impressive.
Who? What are you talking about?
Your song.
That wasn't me.
Oh, yes, it was, Governor. How have you been?
Lovely.
We really
I've
appreciate
been great.
Joining us.
Congratulations on your
Thank
new
you.
Show.
Thank
That's
you.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you.
You
very,
both
very much.
Sound different on public radio.
I know. I think we do. I've cleaned up my act somewhat. You know,
I have not yet,
well,
but I intend to at
be
some
seen.
Point.
There.
But
trying
thank you,
behave.
Governor. And by the way, we will. The governor will take your calls for this full hour. And our number is 877-301-8970. You can tweet questions at BOS. Boss Public Radio. You can email us at bpr@wgbh.org, and you can leave a question on our Facebook page at Boston Public Radio.
And if we can do this as we have in the past, if we don't get to calls or to emails or to other messages through other means, we will collect those, take them back to the office, and get people responses.
We will make sure you get them all. Again, the number is 877 if you want to talk directly to the governor, 301-8970.
So I just wonder, Governor, it is Thursday, of course. That means it's 3 days and counting to the big St. Patrick's Day breakfast. And I wonder if you're all ready to go. You get your outfit picked out. You got the shamrock going.
I am not ready. I will be ready. I'm actually not going to be present personally in the hall.
Oh.
Ooh, good move on
breaking news. But we're going to do a video, which we will hope is funny.
Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be out of town.
Doing what?
That's all I got to say.
Really?
Yeah.
He's been to the St. Patrick's Day.
Can I ask you the
before?
Same question on this, and we'll get rid of it, that I've
he
asked
knows.
You in the past? If you had a choice, Governor, I want an honest answer, between performing live at the St. Patrick's Day breakfast or being waterboarded, which would you choose, Governor?
I would probably choose performing live at the St. Patrick's. Look, I'm not that funny, so but it is a fun thing. I mean, I know
Can
in the
be.
Past people have... sometimes gone off the deep end, but most of the time it's funny, and particularly the jokes we make of ourselves.
Governor, you spent a lot of your time of late advocating for your initiative, a couple of $1 billion in new taxes directed to things like early education, transportation. Where are we, and what's your assessment of where you are on this thing?
Well, I have filed the budget, as you know, which does call for new revenue for investing in transportation and in education, but mainly it's about investing in jobs, because it's a proven strategy that by building and maintaining a modern transportation system and that connectivity that a transportation system brings us, and investing in targeted ways in things like early education, in college affordability, in workforce training and development, we grow jobs. And we've done that in more modest ways through the downturn. It's one of the reasons why we've come out of recession faster than most other states. And the question now is, are we prepared to sacrifice a little to get us a whole lot in the present and in the future? So my budget's before the House now. It's their turn. The Speaker and his team are working their way through those issues, and we've been working together in a very constructive way. They will come up with their version in the next several weeks, and then it'll go over to the Senate. And it's very, very important, I think, that as the folks inside Beacon Hill work this through, that the folks outside Beacon Hill engage as well on the specific transportation plan, the specific education plan, the ways in which we have identified what we understand to be the unmet needs, and the ways in which people may have differences about what those unmet needs are.
Before we take calls, a couple of questions about, just explain if you can, what's the intersection between two things, between this $2 billion plan for those purposes, one, two, this $13.7 billion transportation bond bill over 10 years
right.
that I think you filed in the last 24 hours. And the third part of that is, if either or both of those things happen, would that alleviate the need for a fare hike and a service cut at the T that they've been talking about, or is that a separate thing totally?
No, they're all connected. The remember last year when the T had its budget deficit, and there was a kind of a crisis mentality, and the legislature stepped in to close that 1 year gap. They said at the time, let's have a comprehensive transportation plan. Let's really look at what the unmet needs are, what it costs to pay the bills we have, what it costs to fix up what we have, and then what are the handful of expansion projects that would have a strategic impact in terms of job growth and opportunity. And that is what we spent a year doing. That plan was released early this year with a whole bunch of funding options to go with it. That's called the Way Forward. It's up on the mass.gov website. The total cost of that over 10 years is about $13 billion. So to authorize those projects, not to fund them, but to authorize those projects, we have to do a bond bill. That's what we filed yesterday. The revenue is to pay for that $13 billion over the next decade. And I have a proposal on how to do that, as you know, by cutting the sales tax and raising the income tax, which rebalances things and actually means that if, you know, you make $62,000 or less, your total taxes either stay the same or go down. Your taxes would go up after $62,000 according to your ability to pay. If that plan passes in that form or some other, then the T's current service and cuts go away.
For how long?
They go away, period. Because this is a sustainable, this puts us on a sustainable path, you know, indefinitely. Now, there will be and should be and would normally be in most systems gradual, predictable, fare and toll increases, but not the, you know, long periods of nothing and then big hike because we haven't done it for a long time. You know, it'd be a point or two every two or three years, something like that.
One last question before we get to calls. Bob D'Elia, the Speaker of the House, I've never heard him say an unkind word about you, I should say, so this isn't one of your critics. However, he speaks to the Boston Chamber of Commerce, as you know, not so long ago. He says, if we are to pass a new revenue package, this is about a week ago, I believe it should be far more narrow in scope and of a significantly smaller size. I mean, once the Speaker has spoken, the reality is this $2 billion deal, particularly the income tax hike, is not happening. Is that not a fair statement?
Well, the Speaker and others have assured me that nothing is off the table. And the point is that the Speaker and others in the legislature and beyond totally get the value of these investments, both on the transportation, but particularly on the transportation side. I think we still have some work to do on the education side. And I think he has in mind, or he has been urged to consider a particular way to pay for them, which is through the gas tax. But you can't get there with the gas tax, at least not the gas tax alone. You'd have to triple the gas tax, which would put us so out of whack and be a tremendous burden on people and drive up the cost of just about everything. So, I mean, I proposed the gas tax in the past. Remember, we talked about that a few years ago.
And they did the sales tax instead.
I'm not hostile to the gas tax, but this is why I didn't propose it this time.
Does that mean if he did come up with the gas tax as an alternative to one of the, let's say, the income tax hike, at least a piece of that, you'd say I'll consider that seriously?
I've told him, just as he's told me nothing's off the table, that I've told him I am not closed to anything. Okay. It may be at the end of the day, Jim, that the solution here is a blend of a bunch of different things. I totally get that.
We'll get back to more budget issues in a second, but let's take some phone calls. And again, our number is 877-301-8970, and our email is BPR, as in Boston Public Radio, at WGBH.org. Governor, you want to take some calls here?
All right, let's see. Marianne is calling from Freetown. Marianne.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Freetown, that's me, right?
That's you.
Okay, that's me. I got a little static on that.
Good afternoon. I get a little static every day, Marianne.
But I'm bummed.
First of all, I want to thank you for your comment earlier this week that taxes are the price we pay for civilization, because I absolutely agree with you on that. And
thank you.
It's time for people to be adults, as you said.
I will tell you, Marianne, I've been admonished to stop saying that we need an adult conversation about taxes, because some members on Beacon Hill feel that I am referring to them as children, which is not my intention. So,
I absolutely understand what you mean is we
need a sober conversation about taxes.
I'm calling about Schooner Ernestina.
Yeah.
First, I want to thank you for appointing Ed Lambert Commissioner of DCR. He understands how important the ship is.
Yes.
And he's been working very hard. And my question for you is, if you will urge Commissioner Lambert and President Mulder-Faria and Admiral Gernon to work together to get Ernestina sailing again and serving the Commonwealth as she has in the past,
Marianne, do you want to just say for the callers what Ernestina, who may not know what Ernestina
sure.
is?
Sure. Ernestina is the official vessel of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. She was built in Essex in 1894 and sailed out of Gloucester fishing. She did some science before World War II and served in World War II. Then she was a packet ship to the Cape Verde Islands, and then she was given back to the United States and then to Massachusetts as a gift from the Cape Verdean people. And she's been serving the Commonwealth since 1982 as an educational vessel.
This is what we call a public radio audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good for you. That's a great story, Mary.
And, well, she's our boat, and we need to take care of her and make sure that she can serve the Commonwealth as she has in the past, because she tells the story of Massachusetts history, shipbuilding and fishing and science and
she's been more,
immigrant experience and
she's,
everything.
She's
and,
been more down in New Bedford, I think, until recently. Am I right?
Yeah, she is still in New Bedford.
She's still in New Bedford.
Homeported in, the legislation assigns that she'd be homeported in New Bedford. And we've been working very hard to with Commissioner Lambert and with the Ernestina Commission to get a plan to get her sailing again.
Right. So the issue that Marianne is talking about is that the Ernestina needs some repairs to be appropriate as a museum and let alone a seagoing vessel. And there've been some interest in raising private funds to help with that. And Commissioner Lambert has been, and I will encourage him to continue working with President Molafaria and with Admiral Gernon down at Mass Maritime to do so.
Marianne, thank you so much for your call. Our number is 877-301-8970 if you want to speak directly to Governor Deval Patrick. By the way, I just realized we are streaming live video of today's show at wgbhnews.org/BPR, so no facial expressions from you, Marjorie.
I have to sit up straight in my chair. Good posture.
Where is that chair?
I think it's right there,
Governor. No, it's
looking,
not, actually, but right, go right ahead.
Looking right at you. Governor, you read the Facebook comment from Maura talking about how she's not inclined to pay more taxes
right.
while we're investigating so many departments, and she's referring directly to the Chris Cassidy, Boston Herald reporter's great reporting this week, a couple of things, about Commissioner of Early Education, Sherry Killens, making $200,000 a year. We find out she lives in New Haven. She's in this 300-hour-a-week internship to learn how to be a school superintendent. She's down in Ware from 7 to 3 p.m. in her own date book on several occasions learning to be a superintendent. And that's one thing. Then we found out a little bit earlier, and this was the Herald once again, my own newspaper, Daniel Curley, the former head of welfare, forced to resign.
This is a commercial.
Well, it was important reporting, and I'm pointing it out because people may not know this.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Daniel Curley was forced to resign after the Herald reported on EBT eligibility errors costing about $25 million. Then the feds say the state overpaid on food stamps for $28 million. So my long introduction there is to get to the point. How do we know there aren't more six-figure state employees living in New Haven or working at second jobs? Is anybody investigating?
Well, first of all, let me start with Commissioner Killens, who was a fine and strong and able commissioner of early ed and did her job and did it well. And I knew that she was interested in becoming a superintendent was taking courses for it. The question is whether she was doing it on her own time or on the people's time.
Right.
And that investigation was done, and the conclusion was that she hadn't violated any rule. But she decided rather abruptly to resign. And when someone in a leadership position like that decides to leave and leave abruptly, we do need a little transition. So we've asked her for 2 months to give us that 2 months so we can have a smoother transition. We have an acting commissioner in place, who has been on the Secretary of Education's staff, but we need a little of her time. You know, obviously, I would prefer that she were living in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. But the question is she able to do the job and do it well? And I think she has, and I appreciate it for her service. I think it was right, by the way, to raise the question whether she was violating rules. That's not my issue, and I think we were right to investigate that, and the facts are as I report them. In the case of Commissioner Curley, you know, we've done a lot around fraud and waste in the EBT program mm-hmm. and in welfare generally. We've recovered millions of dollars. It's an imperfect program in terms of, you know, the ability of the technology to do some of the things that people have wanted them, you know, to impose some right. of the limitations. I'm talking about the technology, not telling a tattoo store not to accept EBT. I'm talking about the ability to use that thing in such a place. We're working on that. But the overpayment on the
food stamps
and some of the glitches. It was just the last straw. It's just time for a change. So we've got a good new acting commissioner and a good plan. And it is always about both the integrity of the program and the service and the confidence that the public has in it.
Well, just one last thing on the commissioner, Killens, who you said she did a fine, good job. I don't get how you can be working from 7 in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon down in Ware and really be earning your $200,000 salary.
Well, you get vacation days. I mean, yeah.
Was she doing it on vacation?
Yeah, when you get, she wasn't doing that every day.
Not every day, but quite a bit.
Well, like I said, you get vacation days, okay. And you can make those judgments. Believe me, I have no interest in protecting that kind of behavior.
Okay,
it doesn't reflect well on the administration, and it isn't about getting the job done. But people are doing things in their off time. You know, I wrote a book in my off time. That wasn't, and I, you know, I'm not shorting the people of the Commonwealth on my $137,000 salary.
Can I complete the loop on that, though, just to be clear?
The city of Boston does demand that most employees live in Boston. Should we demand that that Massachusetts department heads and big deal people that are making, you know, good salaries and very important should live in Massachusetts?
I don't know. I'd prefer it. Should we demand it? I don't know. It's it'd be hard to imagine a lot of jobs where that aren't. You know, like mine, sort of 24/7 job where you could live out of state and actually do it. But as I say, I think she did a really great job.
One last loop closer, and then we'll get back to the calls. Just so I'm clear, based on what you said, had your early education commissioner not decided on her own, according to you, to resign, you would not have asked for her resignation.
Well, you know, I didn't have to cross that bridge because she got to where she got as quickly as she did. I think had we gone there, it would have been helpful to have a more gradual transition, which is the reason for the 2 month consultancy.
Back to the phones, Governor, please.
Let's see. Dan is calling from Plymouth. Dan, you there?
Hello. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thanks for hanging on.
I've got a couple of questions, but I'll start with one. We had the Hurricane Nemo, and my particular street was out of power for 6 days.
Six days.
No, it gets better. My house, I can literally see the NSTAR power plant from my house. I could have run an extension cord from it if they would have let me.
Was the power plant operating? Was it powered?
Yeah, no, that's where all the trucks were leaving and coming out of. Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally went out there and was tempted to start throwing snowballs at them to get them to come down, literally run an extension cord to my block. There were two elderly women who were hospitalized during that period on my block.
I do know that
was very upsetting. And I just want to know, I mean, yes, we all think the workers did a hard job and they blah, blah, blah. But, man, I mean, is there any accountability at NSTAR? I don't feel that there was the same kind of problem with National Grid. I think it's NSTAR. And the other question is, I am also concerned about the nuclear power plant in Plymouth, particularly since there's a mothballed natural gas plant in Sandwich, which doesn't seem to be operating for mysterious reasons.
Mm.
And I just want to know, you know, why are you confident that a nuclear power plant, which was the same make and model of the Fukushima nuclear power plant, why you feel that should be extended and why, you know, what confidence do you have in that? I got to tell you, I'm not buying any more property in Plymouth as long as that power plant's there. And thank you very much.
Dan, thank you very much for your questions.
So, Dan, on the second question, you made it sound like I was advocating for the extension of the license. I wasn't, but it's not my call. It's a federal call, as I think you know. And there were federal safety conditions that had to be met, and the plant evidently is trying to meet them. On NSTAR, the you know, it's interesting that Dan was saying, I think, has Dan hung up?
Dan has hung up.
It's interesting what Dan was saying about the relative behavior or performance of NSTAR versus National Grid this time. Remember, it has everything to do with where the brunt of the storm hits. And in this case, the brunt of the storm was greater in the Plymouth area where NSTAR has a larger presence. I think in every one of these storms we've had to do and will do in the case of NEMO, the after incident analysis. And DPU has some power now, thanks to the legislature, to hold utilities accountable for their performance. So that is yet to be evaluated. I have said, though, that with the frequency of these storms, it really is time for the utilities to evaluate afresh the wisdom of investing in putting more of our electrical power underground, so that we're not dealing with this. I mean, we've had back-to-back storms and incidents of this kind,
so, year after year after year. Every 5 years.
Exactly. And you know, we're going to need to reconsider, and I hope that the utilities will reconsider their historical views on this.
Governor, speaking of accountability, at least in one article I saw, you didn't comment on the effort by the Attorney General to get Northeast Utilities to disclose the last 3 months of compensation for the former head of NSTAR, Tom May, who now runs Northeast Utilities. Finally, we learned it's in the neighborhood of $4 million. Did you support what the Attorney General was doing in terms of urging that Northeast Utilities disclose his final 3 months' compensation?
Sure. By the way, I think it was more than
was
that.
It more than 3.8 for the last 4 months?
I'm sorry, just for that 3 months.
Yeah. Does that concern? I've asked you this before. He is somewhere in the range, putting aside whatever he got from the merger with Northeast Utilities, he was making a public utility head where the ratepayer has
a regulated monopoly.
Under a monopoly, that was my next point. Making somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million, apart from this most recent disclosure. Is that a defensible salary for someone in that kind of setting? No matter how good a job someone might argue he's doing.
Yeah, I think people have heartburn about that sort of thing. I don't know all the considerations that go into the CEO's compensation at that company or any other. I am glad of the fact that we have a rate freeze agreed to from NSTAR that goes out. From Northeast Utilities that goes out, I think, to 2016, which was a part of the deal. And so being curious about the compensation would matter in terms of my job, or more to the point, the DPU's job, if it was a factor in the rates being charged to customers. But those are frozen, as I say. As a matter of optics, NSTAR or Northeast Utilities and Tom May, for that matter, are going to have to answer for that.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Back to the phones, Governor Patrick.
Let's see. Tim is calling from Exeter. Tim, you still there?
Yep.
Thank you for holding on.
Good afternoon, Governor.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling from Exeter, New Hampshire. I live in New Hampshire. Like a lot of good New Hampshire residents, I was born in Massachusetts, Cambridge, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And I work in Massachusetts a lot. Uh-huh. I have a lot of clients in Newburyport, the whole North Shore, actually.
What's your business, Tim?
I'm a painting contractor.
Okay.
And I do also high-end renovations.
Mm-hmm.
And I drive on Route 95 more often than Route 93
mm-hmm.
or Route 3 when I go down to Massachusetts. Now, for years, the columnists in the Boston papers have basically generated income generated readership by making fun of the people in New Hampshire. I mean, they made fun of the Hampton Tolls. They made fun of the fact that the Manchester Airport is called Logan Air, the Boston Airport, yada, yada, yada. I could go on and on and on.
You know how uncomfortable Marjorie looks right now?
I don't think
she's squirming. She's squirming in her seat, Tim.
But is there a question, Tim, if you don't mind, because a lot of people want to speak to the governor, please.
So, segueing from New Hampshire being made fun of, when I'm in Massachusetts and I want to travel through New Hampshire and I'm on Interstate Route 95, there's this wonderful big giant rest area, Welcome to New Hampshire, building on the northbound side.
Yeah.
And it opens 24 hours a day.
It's really great. It's well kept. It's modern. It's clean. Yeah.
Yeah. So my here's my question for you, Governor. On the other side of the highway, there is also a highway rest area and a sign that says, Welcome to Massachusetts.
I know where this is going.
And I could have called Ken Brown, who's a client of mine, a year ago and complained about this, and it probably would have gone to your ear a lot faster. But I feel like bothering Ken Brown. So I'm bothering you and asking you why we can't have that building, if not staffed, at least open 24 hours a day. It's unconscionable in my mind. Like I told you, I was born in Cambridge, Mass. 61 years ago. We're getting older as a population, and we need to use the...
Beautifully put, Tim. How about it, Governor Patrick?
So, Tim, can I just say I feel you?
Yes.
So,
all 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, didn't mean to talk over you, and sometimes they don't even open on time.
Got it. We have it, Tim. Let's hear what the governor has to say, Tim, and thank you kindly for your call.
Thank you for the call, but it's a, you know, it may sound like a small example, but there are a lot of these kinds of things that have been cut out in order to be able to make more, you know, to hold the transportation system together. I mean, this is exactly, this is not the most dramatic example. You know, it's not a bridge that's at risk of falling down, or the I-91 viaduct out in Springfield, which, if not repaired, means the shutdown of the whole commercial access north and south in western Massachusetts. But there are lots and lots of things like this that are unmet needs that are contemplated in the transportation plan we put forward.
We're talking with Governor Deval Patrick. He's going to be with us until the top of the hour. You can call him at 877-301-8970 or email at bpr@wgbh.org. Quick break, right back.
A better job, a spouse, a raise, children? What is it that makes us happy?
Human beings would never make progress if we just kind of were content with the status quo. But no, we always want more.
I'm Kara Miller. Research into what makes us happy and why. This week on Innovation Hub, tonight at 9, here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you. An Innuendo in Natick celebrating the Hunter Douglas Energy Smart Style Window Fashion Event featuring Hunter Douglas Duet Arcatella Energy Efficient Shades along with Silhouette and Luminette Shading Systems. Innuendo.com. And the Harvard Innovation Lab, where entrepreneurs from across Harvard, the Alston community, Boston, and beyond engage in teaching and learning in pursuit of taking their innovative ideas to the world. ilab.harvard.edu.
You are listening to Boston Public Radio with the Governor of the Commonwealth. He will be with us once a month, like today, to answer your questions from noon to 1. Hello again, Governor Patrick.
Hello again, Jim and Marjorie.
Here's a question, Governor, if I may. Casinos, have you contemplated, we talked obviously a lot of the first half hour about the revenues you're looking for, tax revenues you're looking for to fund your priorities, and you relate them to jobs. Have you considered at all slowing down some of those expenditures and waiting for some of the casino revenues to come in? Is that part of your possible agenda?
Well, actually, you know, you remember that the casino revenue is apportioned already. It's not
every
like
dollar
this.
Is a
yeah,
a,
yeah.
Oh,
all,
I didn't know.
It's
that.
All
okay,
divided up
that.
in the bill. Some of it goes to different education issues. Some of it goes to local aid and so forth. It's all down to the half a percentage point.
So that's a moot issue. So let me ask you a related question. I've asked Steve Crosby, the head of the Gaming Commission, are you concerned about what some would consider a deliberate pace of the Gaming Commission, some would consider too slow? Since this all started, the new governor of New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan, mm-hmm. Replaced a casino opponent. Now she's a casino advocate, mm-hmm. says she's fast tracking it. We have voters in Rhode Island, yes, in November, who voted to expand their gaming, the spread of gaming at some of their locations, Twin Rivers in particular. Are you worried we're going to get left behind?
No.
When our neighbors, why aren't you worried about that?
I don't think so. First of all, I think it is really important that the Gaming Commission do this right, not just fast. And it's a big step. It was a big, big step to pass the legislation because there were so many views on various sides of the question. A lot of those got baked into the different dimensions of the legislation. But there's still some judgments that have to be made. One thing that I will say, maybe break some news. We have reached a, an agreement in principle now with the tribe. For a new compact, so and we've vetted it with the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
That would be the Southeast Mass site,
exactly,
for those who don't know.
Exactly, and we may be able to. We need to brief the leadership just to make sure they're comfortable with where we've landed and work out what the legislative calendar would be for getting it approved. But we may be able to sign that in the next few days. So if that is approved by the legislature promptly and by the Bureau of Indian Affairs promptly. And they, the Bureau of Indian Affairs actually in Washington has a statutory time deadline by which they have, I think it's 30 days or 45 days. The tribe tells us that they could be in the ground, you know, this year.
So that could be the first one then, obviously.
It could be the, it could be the first one.
You know, we, you were talking before with the gentleman calling about the storm, you know, the
storm
of the century that comes every 5 years now and the Nemo and so forth. We all watched, like, with horror this developed up in Plum Island with
these houses.
Oh,
wasn't it awful? Yeah.
Yes, it was just awful. And, you know, Jim has done a lot of stuff on his TV show, and he had your Department of Environmental Protection commissioner on the air saying basically that Plum Island, well, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, you interviewed him, Plum Island has kind of had it.
He said in the long term, it's done. He said, basically, what my understanding is, in the short term, you've relaxed all regulations, said they can do whatever they want there. Later, they may have to take them down, departing. But I asked him twice, in the long term, is there a future for Plum Island? And his answer was quite directly, no. Do you share that view?
Well, you know, I don't have the science, but I do know what the evidence points to. I think I'm right about this, that the beachfront on Plum Island receded 100 feet in 100 years from 1894 to 1994, and another 100 feet in the years since then. So, I mean, if that pace continues, we are in big, big trouble. I think the relaxation of all the regs was during the storm itself, or an immediate run up to the storm. And there is a, you know, there's a, I know there are homeowners on Plum Island who have had some ideas that that either the DEP or the Army Corps don't think will work or will risk greater damage to their neighbors' houses, that sort of thing. But those were horrifying pictures, and I just can't imagine the gut feeling that's going through those homeowners when they watch their homes, you know, topple into the sea.
Oh, God. Well, I think you were wise to build your summer house in the Berkshires and not in the middle of East Ham.
I knew the governor would like that.
I think Cape Cod's going to be gone soon, too. I'm hysterical about that.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Governor, back to the calls.
Let's see. Dana is calling from Dennis. Dana, you there?
Thank you, Governor. I have a question about transportation again.
Mm-hmm.
Like the commuter or passenger rail service, I'm not sure what the distinction would be there, but from Falmouth to South Station used to be a really valuable service.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe, and this is long before you were governor, of course, and I don't believe it was discontinued for legitimate or honorable or truthful reasons.
What do you think reasons were?
Well, I think the highway lobbies had a big say in it because, you know, there was more money to be made, you know, pandering to, I mean, cars, automobiles, and buses. And
so this goes back a while.
This goes back a ways, yeah. I've got it from a reliable friend who's a walking transportation encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
And he got me interested in the commuter rail, which I would like to see come back.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, in Europe. Europe has a wonderful system. And it would just be great as far as, you know, snowstorms and, you know, because buses, you know, and traffic, when traffic gets really tied up, I think it would be a first step in alleviating Cape traffic problems.
Mm-hmm.
Not a panacea, but a major first step. And people could commute off Cape to jobs, you know, outside the Cape.
Closer
if they
in.
Have.
Mm-hmm. So Dana, the South Station to Hyannis route reopens this summer. And it's on a pilot basis this summer. so that we can test out the economics. And the hope is to begin to run it year-round if the economics work. Now, that's in the plan, you should know, in the transportation plan. There are other now dormant routes that used to be vital, like South Coast Rail down to the down to Fall River, New Bedford, which are also in this plan. None of them are possible without new revenue, and that's the hard thing. People love the elements of the plan. They see the worth in these kinds of projects, but we all feel a little little uncomfortable when it comes to the taxes to pay for them. And that's the conversation that, as a Commonwealth, we're having right now.
Dana, thank you kindly for the call, 877-301-8970. If you want to speak directly to Governor Patrick. Governor, a question was emailed in at bpr@wgbh.org. You've been obviously a surrogate for the president, both through the campaign and subsequently on things like Meet the Press. Justice Roberts in the hearing on – why are you laughing?
Are you talking about the voting rights
thing? Yes, I am. Oh. Justice Roberts in the voting rights case – and you were head of the Civil Rights Division, obviously, for the Attorney General, U.S. Attorney's Office for a while there, basically made disparaging remarks about discriminatory voting practices in Massachusetts. Bill Galvin, Secretary of State, was up in arms. What was your reaction to what Justice Roberts had to say?
Well, thank God for Bill Galvin, because he called him right out. But, you know, this is a funny thing about a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He doesn't even have to cite his sources when he's in colloquy with the lawyers arguing a case in front of him. It was just to me, it felt like a cheap shot.
877-301-8970. Let's go back to the calls, Governor.
David is calling from Seekonk. David, you there?
Hello, Governor.
Hi, David. Thanks for hanging on.
Thank you. I like what you're doing with your proposed budget for next year, but on the revenue side, I think that makes a lot of sense
to
you know, move in the direction of a more progressive income tax, you know, to income and away from sales tax. But my question kind of relates more to local schools. I'm a member of the school committee here in Seekonk, and your proposed budget gives us some ability and funding to bring back some programs and teachers that have been laid off since the financial crisis over the past 4 or 5 years. So as we build our budget for the next fiscal year, I guess our question is...
Is it going to pass?
You got it. And what can we do to make sure this happens? We can get back some of these, you know, very important programs that have been eliminated and teaching jobs that have been eliminated.
Well, David, first of all, thank you for your comment and for your service to the children of Seekonk. What you can do is call your state rep and senator and express your support for these proposals. I think, I don't meet many people, many parents, many business people who don't think that these investments are the right investments for us to make. As I was saying earlier, the issue is the classic one. Are we prepared to pay a little more to get a lot more? And, Marjorie raises, I think, a question on, did earlier in the program, on a lot of people's minds as well. Have we squeezed out as much as possible?
That's right. Squeeze.
Before we go to the public? And those are all fair questions. You know, we've cut 6,000 positions in state government. State government is smaller now than when I took office, and I think smaller than it's been in a long, long time. We've closed some $22 or $21 billion in accumulated deficits, 60% of that with cuts in programs and services. Most of the rest of it in with the help of stimulus money, actually, and only a relatively small part of that with the sales tax increase. We've closed agencies that we've been talking about closing in the Commonwealth for decades, like the Turnpike Authority. We've rebalanced the health care benefits at both the state and the local level through, I think it was called plan design. You remember we talked about that on the program a year ago.
And don't forget the MBTA, Governor.
Well, the 23 years and out, and that's over.
It used to drive me crazy.
There is a big proposal pending still in the legislature around retiree health benefits. It's very delicate because it's taking things away from people, but it's, I think, fair, and it's a series of recommendations that were come up with by a lot of hard work, by a lot of different interests, including labor. That's expected to save $20 billion over the next three decades. We need the legislature to move on that. So that work is happening. But we're not going to be able to reform our way to a 21st century transportation or education system. And that's a reality, and we all need to talk about that.
Speaking of transportation, Steve on our Facebook page wants to know, why does the state concentrate billions in infrastructure projects in Boston and not in central and western Massachusetts?
So that's also got to end. You know, the penultimate example, did you say it was Steve?
Steve, yeah.
The penultimate example of what Steve is getting at was the Big Dig, right, which was one mega project in downtown Boston that basically sucked all the investment away from transportation and other public infrastructure everywhere else. One of the reasons why the tab for deferred maintenance is so big right now is because we've deferred it so long. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that deferred maintenance is outside of the greater Boston area. It's very, very important to me, to the point where I would not support a transportation plan that did not have regional equity in it, because we have so much catch up to do. And everywhere it is done, everywhere we invest these dollars, jobs and prosperity come, and that's the key.
877-301-8970 is our number if you want to speak directly till 1 o'clock to the governor of the Commonwealth.
You know, Governor, there was a proposal, a little half-baked as it turned out, to bring the Olympics to Boston for 2024, and Tom Nino pointed out that it would cost, you know, I think $6 or $7 million unrefundable just to make a proposal. But other people were really keen on it. Of course, it would be the whole state, really, because you couldn't do it all in Boston. How do you feel about the Olympics?
Well, you know, when I was a relatively young lawyer and in private practice, there were a group of us who got together on this, and this is 25 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There was a prominent business leader who was very involved in it, and we brought someone who had helped organize the proposal for, I want to say, Atlanta. To Boston, which was one of the winning proposals, Atlanta or L.A., I can't remember which, to Boston to talk to some of us about what was involved and how to get organized and the different types of investments you'd show you'd be willing to do and where the – I mean, it's a very exciting thing, but there's a whole lot to it, and it's expensive. So I think, you know, I like it, but I'm focused on something else right now.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the calls. Governor Deval Patrick.
Let's see. Jesse is calling from Lynn. Jesse, you there?
Yeah, this is Jesse Jager from Lynn, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hey, I'm back in May of 2000 or last year, Immigration Customs Enforcement kind of forced Massachusetts to implement the Secure Communities Program over your objections. And there's a bill that was filed in January by Senator Eldridge and Representative Kurt Shortino called the Massachusetts Trust Act. And I was just wondering what your position is on, you know, the Secure Communities Program as it stands right now and that piece of legislation that will prevent the breaking up of Massachusetts immigrant families because of ICE's detention policies.
Jesse, forgive me for not being familiar with the senator's specific bill, but it's my hope that Secure Communities is going to be overtaken by comprehensive immigration reform at the federal level, and there seems to be bipartisan interest in that right now. I think the president's I've forgotten the name of the executive decision he made around deportations and students in particular.
The Dream Act light kind of thing.
Was also helpful. And the reiteration to ICE to focus on violent offenders and not breaking up families while we wait to sort out what comprehensive immigration reform will look like is right. I do hear a lot, as you may, Jesse, on the ground that in individual cases there's still some fundamental hardships imposed on people, and there's still a lot of people living in fear. And I do think we got to get this right and get it right in a way that is consistent with our values. And the first person I heard speak to this thoughtfully since I've been in public life, the first person, was George W. Bush.
Really?
In the White House in the very first governor's meeting I went to as governor. He was asked a question about this. And remember, he was a governor of a border state. He understands these issues in some ways. He understands these issues, and he was very, very thoughtful about it, and also quite realistic about the politics then. I think the politics have improved since.
Jesse, thank you very much for your call, Governor. When we last were together in December, we asked you about I think I asked you about whether or not you still had full confidence in your lieutenant governor. Since we saw each other, a couple things have happened. One, the campaign finance office has said he may have violated state law, as you know. The former crooked head of the Chelsea Housing Authority, not former crooked, but former head, has pled guilty. And the state is looking at, state grand jury is looking into fundraising on behalf of Murray by McLaughlin. And you've read the Globe reports where there were 100 and some calls between them.
Right.
Employees are suggesting McLaughlin actually emceed fundraising events for your lieutenant governor. Is your confidence shaken at all by this plea, these investigations, this grand jury? Do you still feel the same way you've always felt?
Well, most of it isn't breaking news, if you will. I mean, the lieutenant governor who asked for the investigation to be sure that he was on the right side of the rules and his understanding of the facts. But he's been an amazing partner in a job which would be hard for a lot of people to do, because normally the lieutenant most lieutenant governors have their own political ambitions, and sometimes it's a great thing for that lieutenant governor to show a little daylight between him or herself and the governor for their own reasons for their own politics. This lieutenant governor has been a fantastic partner, and when we argue about differences on policy or politics, that argument ends with a decision. And then that decision is our decision. And that's an incredible kind of partnership to have. So I am grateful to him. I think he's done a terrific job. I understand his decision not to run because I understand how personal a decision that is. And he's got a fabulous young family. And I hope his day will come.
But he had a fabulous young family in November when he said he was running for governor. And then 2 months later, that same fabulous family he decided was...
You know, it's interesting what you say and how it's been reported. What he said was he, like a lot of people, would like to be governor one day. And I hope he will be governor one day.
Fair enough. Let's go back to the calls. He's Governor Deval Patrick.
Rhoda is calling from Newton. Rhoda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Hi, Rhoda.
Good afternoon.
Rhoda Davidson from Newton Center, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Governor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I am the parent of a disabled adult child who is now in her 50s,
mm-hmm.
who is living successfully in the community with her parents' assistance financially as well as emotionally,
mm-hmm.
and been very successful with our personal-centered planning for her.
Good.
We have found when we tried to communicate with the governor's office that you have no disability advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very significant omission on your part, and I hope that you...
You mean within the governor's office as opposed to within the administration?
Within the governor's office,
mm-hmm.
yes, because basically there is a new program that is coming out of the executive office. I presume that, one of your... programs have a person under the new Affordable Care Act
mm-hmm.
will be instituted soon,
mm-hmm.
which will pull my daughter out of our own planning for her
mm-hmm.
and take her out of Medicare. I retired early in my life so that she could go on Medicare
mm-hmm.
and take her out of Medicare and put her into Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a program that would be very destructive for her. So I think it would be important for you to have a disability advisor. I think it's significant that we do have, it is a minority.
Mm-hmm.
And as a member of a minority group, you know how difficult it is to get noticed sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly have gotten noticed, and I'm glad that you have.
I'm going to take that in the spirit of which it was.
Your paternal instincts and your lifelong experience, knowing how difficult it is to have people politically aware
mm-hmm.
that the disabled are last on the list.
How about that, Governor, about having a disability advisor in your office?
Well, I thank Rhoda for her comment and for her advice. We do try to use the whole of the administration rather than just the staff in the office, and the folks who answer, I guess what would be the term, constituent calls in the office, triage to others elsewhere in the administration. But the point is well taken. I'm really pleased we have. a record number of people with disabilities working in state government, including in my office. Because I'm pleased with that on a whole bunch of levels, including the symbolic one, because folks do have abilities, in fact, and they need to be recognized for that. But Rhoda, I take your point. I hear you.
Governor, in a couple of
Thank you, Rhoda.
In a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking about United States Senator Rand Paul's 13-hour filibuster protesting Barack Obama's drone policy. The drone has become very controversial. I wonder what you. I mean, this is not a Massachusetts issue. No one's no drones in Massachusetts.
Well, actually, there's a bill filed by Bob Hedlund with some Democratic
support
about domestic use of drones within our borders. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wonder what you think.
You're asking if I have a drone fleet?
I do not have a drone fleet. You think about you don't have a drone fleet. I wonder what you think about drones, about Obama's policy about drones.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to. I'm still trying to stay in my lane and not feel like I have to have an opinion on everything. I think the president's been clear about the use of drones against American citizens on American soil. And that is intolerable. I wonder what the people who make war on behalf of the United States how they make that calculation is between using a drone or sending in a bunch of infantry men and women, and how you do that trade-off. And it seems to me that when you add in the ways in which other technologies, cyber attacks, and what have you, or forms of weapons of mass destruction, that the rules of warfare, to the extent there are rules, are all up for grabs. And I don't pretend to be an expert in all that.
Well, there is a controversy that I think is right in the governor's wheelhouse.
What's
I don't
that?
Know if you've weighed in on the state rock song.
No, he's
issue.
Refused to. No, I've read in the paper. Governor, it's your state. You're the chief executive.
Do you want to hear a couple of little beats of each one and decide?
Have you got
right
them all
here?
We actually do.
We do. Let's
hear
them teed up.
How did I know?
Roadrunner and Dream On.
I see my time is up.
No, it's not. Here are the two contestants. Take it away. Can we
one,
take it?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Governor gives it an 8, says he can dance to it. How about Dream On?
Do
we have that for
course,
a second?
Stop and Shop and 128.
Here's Dream On. Well, while we're waiting for Steven Tyler to sing, do you have a choice, Governor? This is actually a hot issue
I know
on
it
Beacon
is.
Hill.
Very
hot.
I know
so
very
where
hot.
Are you? You can't pick Earth, Wind, and Fire. We know you're a big fan of theirs.
Well,
they're not locals.
If we can't pick Earth, Wind, and Fire, I don't know what we're talking about here.
I'm not going to make a choice.
Not
sorry.
Make a choice.
I noticed that.
Governor's remaining neutral on this. This
I
is a burning
that,
issue, Governor.
I noticed that Marjorie was only boogieing here on the first not the second.
I am Roadrunner.
Don't give it
boogieing.
Away.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Hey, Governor, can I ask you one last question?
And you, Jim, your view?
What's my view?
Yes.
I'm a Philly boy, so this does the chubby checker is my guy. What can I say? Okay, Governor, before you go away, this is an obsession of mine and while you're here, and I know you're concerned about health. Did you tell us once that you were a fat kid when you were growing up at
yes.
point? You
chubby,
did.
Chubby, chubby.
Whatever. So
overweight.
Was I. I mean, we've had this discussion. I'm a huge fan of Mayor Bloomberg's decisions to wade in all these public health issues. Obviously, as you know, a Supreme Court judge, which is not the highest court, it's a trial court in New York, struck down as arbitrary and capricious his ban on sodas of 16 ounces or more than 16 ounces. One, how do you feel about that? And two, how do you feel about government doing what Bloomberg is doing, where he's looking at salt, a whole variety of issues where I think one can make the case that we haven't been able to police ourselves. Where are you on that role of government?
I think there's a lot more that we can do in teaching and showing people the value and importance of healthy choices that stop short of making those choices for them.
Hear that, Jim?
And I think we're struggling with this right now, by the way, with this new law around the body weight index in schools, and I'm not comfortable with that, and so we're looking at whether that we ought to rethink it. But the fact is, this isn't just about what's nice. This is about a health epidemic, and it needs to be dealt with as a public health issue. Most public health issues are dealt with a combination of public education and steps that make it easier to make those healthy choices. So in the case of schools, for example, you know, having healthier food in the cafeteria and smaller portion sizes and so forth. So I think if there's a sort of a type of choice, it would be for me more in that category.
Okay, Governor, before you go, first of all, two things. Governor said at the top of the hour, anybody who has either Facebooked in a question, tweeted in a question, emailed a question, or if you're on the line, stay on, and the governor's office will respond to all of you. And Governor, obviously the major initiative, as we said, is this budget thing of yours. How do people get information, at least from your perspective? What's the website again? What's the deal with that?
So on the website, mass.gov/governor, there are a couple of tools. One is a map by House and Senate districts that shows precisely what projects and what education funding would come to your city or town. So you can see what we're talking about. This isn't an abstract number. We've actually built it up by specific projects in specific places. That's the first. The second is there's a tool where you can put in your own income information and see what the impact on you would be of the tax plan.
At that same site?
At that same site.
Oh.
And you can also play with it. So you can change different rates and so forth and come up with your own way, your own suggestion for how to raise this $1.9 billion for transportation and education investment.
When you come back next month, will you bring that little black bear or brown bear in your jacket like you were doing?
Cute, huh?
Oh, my
very
God.
Cute.
Just unbelievable.
Governor
very
Patrick,
cute.
We really appreciate your time. We'll
thank
see
you
next month on
Congratulations
Boston Public
on
Radio.
The new show.
Thank,
oh,
you.
Thank you
so much
very
for joining
much
us.
For being with us today, Governor Deval
to
Patrick. Okay, he has been, as you know, here with us today. He's going to be here with us again next month. Rand Paul, did he shame the Democratic Party with his anti-drone filibuster? Did he position Barack Obama as a war hawk? Christopher Lydon brings us that conversation on Open Mic next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.